What's up?
Saeed!
How you doing?
I have my own microphone today.
I know. Last time we had to share a microphone, we had technical difficulties.
Yeah. It was fun in a way.
You know what's funny is my engineer actually said it was the easiest episode to edit though.
Because we're only using the one mic.
He actually is trying to talk us into using one mic.
Well, we'll see how it goes this episode. And if it's not great, we'll go back to one.
We can stick to two.
Wow, thanks.
Well, no, not like that, but I'm just saying, you know. Fun thing. Went to a writer's meet.
Oh.
For the Oscars.
Oh.
Four writers came up to me and said they listened to our podcast.
Can you name them?
No. Okay. Sorry, the four people that came up to me. But I'm not good with names anyway.
Yeah.
But all four of them came up to me and said they listened to the podcast.
That's incredible.
Another episode of Two Writers
Talking Shit.
Yes. And we have a special guest today.
Oh, we've got an incredible guest today who comes to us by way of one of my incredible managers at the Cartel, Audrey Knox. She recommended an incredible showrunner to us. Please welcome to the show, it's Jordana Arkin.
Hey, yes.
Welcome, Jordana. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you have such an epic career. We can't wait to get into everything. I am going to attempt to list some of your credits now. Obviously, if these aren't correct, they're from the internet. You've been a working writer for over 20 years. You've been staffed for 18 of those years at different levels. You have been hired to write 19 pilots, 9 of which were produced and or went to series, and had 78 paid writing jobs for various comedy projects, which include 34 freelance episodes and 10 video games. Wow.
I think I broke that down.
I love that.
I tried. It's hard.
That's incredible. That's the dream. That's the dream. That's what we're striving for.
What's the secret?
Yeah.
Are you going to bottle it up and sell it? That's what we want.
I am trying to. The secret is to... When I went into writing... I'll go back.
Yes, please.
I came out to LA from Chicago. I went to California Institute of the Arts, and I was going to be a painter. Mm. And in my junior year, I went, I'm on the track of being a starving artist, and I like to eat.
Yeah. So we all do.
Right? I'm like, So I ended up doing an internship at Paramount, and I was on a show. I can't date myself. It's like way old. And so I was on a show and I heard the writers in the writer's room laughing. And I went, oh, that's what I want to do. Mm. Eat, write, and laugh. I'm like, this is a career. And then there's this other crazy story where when I was at CalArts, I was in one of the studios. They had them in the basement. Mm. Like basically one big room that they put partitions up. And some crazy person lived in their basement.
Oh.
And I would paint the walls and it would come back. The words would like helter skelter, come back and haunt me. And one night I was down there and this guy appeared and he kind of had like blonde curly hair and one eye. I'm not sure this is true.
Oh my gosh.
It might have been, I didn't do a lot of drugs, but it might have been.
Just enough.
Just enough
to hallucinate this one-eyed man.
And the one-eyed man said to me, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm an artist. And he's like, and what else do you do? And I go, I write. And he goes, 1% of artists make a living at it. 5% of writers make a living at it.
Wow.
And then.
What that 4% bump.
And I went, so I got to the point, I went, I think I'm going to be right.
You heard that and decided to jump in?
Yeah. I can still picture it. I'm serious. I don't know.
You know what Jordana
really
said?
Too much
she heard that 5%. She said the odds are in my favor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I thought I was upping my odds to make a living.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I made it, you know. And so I went into it as a business. I mean, I go, I want to be creative. I don't really care what I do specifically. I want to be creative. And I was making short films and videos and writing and editing and directing them and all this. And I just go, okay, I want to focus on the writing, you know, just one aspect of it. And how can I make a living doing it? So it was always a business to me. I wasn't too precious. You know, I'm a sensitive artist. Nobody likes to be rewritten and stuff like that. But I wasn't precious about it. I was like, this is a job. If this isn't working or this rep isn't helping me, I need to move on.
That's tight.
Yeah.
That's
so smart. How did you go from the basement?
to Paramount.
While I was in college, I did. USC had a summer school program where you made short films and you met Spielberg and you met all these, you know, Bob Zemeckis and all these people. And it was amazing. And nothing came of that, but I had a room. I lived on campus and my roommate's girlfriend's boyfriend had done an internship at Paramount. Nice. And he, I said, "Oh, wow, can I do something like that on a show?" You know, and he's like, "Give me your resume." I'm like, "What's a resume? And how do you have a resume when you're in college?" Yeah, you know, so I made up a resume, and I ended up getting the internship on the show because it was just great timing. Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that's, and then I realized, okay, I want to be a writer, and I'd look at a script and I go, "How the heck do you do this?"
Exactly.
I'm like, "I don't know how to do this." So after 5 years of undergrad, I created my own master's program. I took classes at UCLA Extension, AFI, you know, Neil Simon's brother, Danny Simon, had a comedy writing class. And, you know, I just took classes everywhere so I could learn how to write. Mm-hmm. And that led to how I got my break was, I'm answering.
No.
Like, you're not even answering.
This was question two, so
yeah,
please.
Okay, I know. And I was in the library doing research for a script, and I was waiting at the copy machine. There was a guy standing there with a script in his hand or whatever. And I said, "Oh, what do you do? You write?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I do freelance for Hanna-Barbera, you know?" And I went, "Animation, that's writing scripts, like in my, you know?" Mm-hmm. And I was having a Valentine's Day party for all my single friends to try to hook them up.
She's a matchmaker.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I said to him, "If you mentor me through an animation script, I'll invite you to my singles party. Nice. Maybe you can meet someone."
Good trade.
That was a good trade.
Right?
That was a good trade. Really good trade.
This business is transactional.
You gotta add value.
That's right. That's right.
Add value.
And this is such a good example of people always think when they hear add value, they think, oh, it has to be something like about the business. Right. It has to be career oriented. And it doesn't, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I had my boyfriend at the time. So it's like, if he thinks I'm interested, this is a great way to say, like, "I'm not interested in you."
I'm locked up.
Yeah. Right. I'm locked I like that. Locked up. Hear that, honey? And people ask me, they're like, "Did he meet anyone?" I'm like, he went out with someone. I don't know.
Yeah, that's enough.
Doesn't matter.
You gotta go on 100 dates.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. A question, though.
To my husband, I was his first girl.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, I was 19 when we met.
Love that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Wait, okay. So you did the exchange. You said,
mentor.
Yeah. Mentor me and I'll invite you to my Valentine's party. Okay, and then what happened after that?
Okay, so he mentored me through a script.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then at Hanna-Barbera, they were having sort of this cattle call of writers for a new show. They were wraparounds, it was a live action wraparounds around cartoons. Mm-hmm. And he put my name in the hat, so I got to go. And there were like 25 writers and 15 scripts to give out, these little things. And
I'm
like,
the odds were a little better.
Right. So I go,
5%.
Right. I go, there you go. Wow, you're doing the numbers.
No,
so I said, okay, you know, and I went in and I watched the show. And then we had a pitch on the phone to the head writer. My first pitch was on the phone, right?
Landline?
Yes, landline. Yes. So, oh my God, before the internet, before cell phones. So we had to pitch on the phone. That's so funny. So I was dripping with sweat. I was so nervous. I didn't know what I was saying, you know.
Yeah.
And I was really young, you know, too. Like, I was just like, blah. And it was I remember it was a Friday. And he goes, "Okay, breathe." He goes, "There's something in there, but like, you need to figure it out and calm down and all this." He goes, "I'll give you the weekend, work through the ideas and call me back on Monday." And this, I'm like, okay, like, thank you for like giving me another chance.
Yeah.
And I worked on it all weekend and I called him money. I was feeling better, this and that. I pitched it. He goes, "Okay, we're going to buy this one." Wow. And that was my first sale.
That's dope.
And I came in the next day and, you know, the whole thing. And I ended up doing, 6 more episodes or something like that. 6 more of them after the first one. And Jennifer Aniston was in one of mine.
Wow.
And classic. This was before Friends. And I was like, wow, she's really good. Why isn't she doing more? Like, she's really spectacular. So, yeah. So that was my kickoff. And then you go, like, how do you get your next job?
Right.
I didn't know. So I went to the head writer, you know, the guy who, you know, I pitched to. I said, now what? Now, yeah, like you're casting me off into the world. This, I had my first job. And I said, can you give me some names of people to call?
Smart.
And because it was Hanna-Barbera, even though it was a live show.
That's a classic company, though. I mean,
but people thought it was, I did animation, even though I had nothing to do with animation.
Right, okay.
Otherwise, my sample was animated.
Right.
So he gave me some names, and I called them, cold called them. They were willing to meet with me. I pitched for this one show, and I remember I didn't get it. And I remember crying in the mirror, and I go, you're crying because you didn't get to write Dink the Little Dinosaur. Like, you really need to get a grip on rejection, you know, like keep rejection in perspective and move on. And so, you know, I managed. So, and then I got an agent with, my first agent with this, that job. Because I was like, okay, I realized it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
You can't get a job till you get an agent. It was really that way back then. And
even
and
more so now, almost. Do you think? No,
I think it's less now. Because I think you have more with, you know, being able to email people and stuff like that. I think you have direct access to people that you really didn't have before.
Yeah. Okay, I get you.
Well, even things like social media, right? It could be like you tweet out like a script or something on X.
Yeah.
And somebody of value could read it.
Absolutely.
That definitely wasn't happening.
Yeah.
In the landline.
Absolutely.
Times.
And you could get their emails and stuff. You just didn't know how to get to people. You didn't know how to get their phone numbers or any information. So you needed an agent, or you needed to luck out and get a job. So I had that. So basically I bought my first agent. I said, look, I'll give you 10% of these scripts. They were only $1,000 scripts. They were these little short wraparounds, but she wouldn't take one. But when I had seven, she goes, okay, I'll take you on.
You're a money maker.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I didn't like her because, you know, I just was like, she's the only person who would talk to me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know I'm going to get rid of you as soon as I can because, you know,
you're, stepping stone.
You're not nice. She wasn't nice.
Yeah. So she was a cunt.
Now we're talking shit.
Yeah.
I love that.
So you like that?
She ended up like suing the
you.
No,
oh.
No, the person whose company she worked for was making all this money. Yeah, she was icky.
Yeah.
So what I did was, you find out who their, you know, it's a small to mid-sized agency, who her direct competitor is.
Oh.
You call that person and go, hi, I'm with so-and-so. You know, I'm not really happy and I want to leave. Oh, well, I don't want to steal you from that person, but I will.
Mm.
So then you go to that person. Oh. I did that four times.
Oh, wow. Wheeling and dealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go. See, you're like, interesting.
I love that. I've like literally never heard of that tactic before.
Yeah, but it's kind of like...
No, but it makes sense.
Yeah, because you said you had a business mind when you came in, which is...
I guess.
A lot different than most writers, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is crazy, because I was a painter. I was like even more like non-business person. But I don't know, somehow I put my business hat on.
That's tight.
Yeah.
That's tight.
And I went, okay, this is a strategic way to get another person. So then those other agents got me my first staff meeting.
Oh. Mm.
So I was up for the Mickey Mouse Club in Orlando.
I used to love that.
Yeah, they were the MMC.
Yeah.
And my family all lived in Tampa, you know, so I was like, oh, I'll be 50 minutes from my family.
Right.
You know, like it wasn't really going somewhere unfamiliar.
Yeah.
So I went, I wrote a sketch and I got the interview. And they're like, okay, you know, we like you. We like your writing. It's two older men, you know. And they said, but what else can you do for us?
Oh.
And I went, I can get you chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, what? And I said, I can get you chicken. My mom sells frozen chicken Kiev, cordon bleu, like a box of chicken to my uncle owns the company and they sell to hotels and distributors and stuff. So I can get you chicken. And they're like, oh, really?
Oh my God.
So I got the job and I got them chicken.
Nice.
Oh.
And I got Saved by the Bell similarly.
Saved by the Bell?
Yeah, which, you know, the new class.
Oh, yeah.
It was the last year of the new class.
Yeah, no, that's cool, but
it's not as cool, but it's okay.
Classic,
it was fun.
Yeah.
Wait, okay.
But I got them
when
chicken
they said,
too.
What else can you do for us? That sounded risque.
Sexual.
Yeah. And it was.
It wasn't.
It was not.
I'm still friends with the guy. I'm friends with everybody like that. I work. The guy who gave me my first break, who I pitched you on the phone, ended up like he went to be a voiceover director, and I was running a show, and I ended up getting to hire him as our voiceover director.
That's
like
dope.
So many years later. Yeah, everything. You know, it's a small business if you end up. You know, working in as many jobs, you end up running into the same people. And I keep in touch with everybody. So that boss, no, he's the type, he's kind of a, like a comedian guy. So he's kind of needling me, like, what else can you do for me? You know, that's was his, but I could have thought it was sexual, but I think I just went straight to the chicken.
Yeah, well, that's your deal.
Because I was kind of like,
you do.
I was just like, what do I have at my disposal? I have chicken.
Chicken, she's got chicken. You know what, I love like the innovation. You know what I mean? She's like, I'm gonna be a yenta. I'm gonna matchmake your sorry ass. You know, like I got all these single girlfriends.
I'm gonna feed this set.
Yeah. I'm gonna, exactly.
Not only am I gonna write episodes, but I'm gonna feed this set.
But you have to find, I said, you know, and I did a webinar, I go, you have to find your chicken.
Yes.
What's your chicken?
What is your chicken?
They can hire any writer.
Yeah. 100%.
Everybody has a good script, you know, or they, I mean, not everybody, but they get a pile of scripts.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a handful of great scripts and nice people.
Yeah.
What separates you? What can you do for them?
True. Wow.
You know, I worked with a writer who was best friends with a huge rock star. I go, you think he doesn't mention that in every interview within, you know, 5 minutes?
Is that the kind of thing we should mention?
If you have one?
You might start to.
You have to deliver.
You might.
Yeah. You have to deliver the chicken. I had to get them the chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't that easy, believe it or not. It's a challenge. But whatever you offer, you have to pay off.
Oh, okay. So you shouldn't just be like name dropping your famous friends unless you could get them to be on the show kind of thing.
Come on set, maybe.
Or write tickets to something. Yeah.
Okay.
You better.
Okay.
You have to deliver.
You have to deliver. You have to deliver. God, I love this.
That makes sense, though. Like you do have to stand out however you can, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's, like you said, like I was talking to a showrunner last week and she was talking about how she had literally 400 scripts on her desk to staff. I think she ended up staffing 6 writers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, as a future showrunner, I'm thinking 400 scripts, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And you're just a pile of names.
Yep.
And so once they window that down to the interview, how are you going to stand out?
Right.
Anyway, like, you don't know. Chicken might have been his favorite dish.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
So I'm just saying, whatever it is, you know, like whatever you have also that is it, that you can bring to the table, or even your past job as a painter. Because I used to work at Kelly Moore Paint Store.
Oh, what?
I was like, you don't know this, but this was like my second job.
Okay.
And so it's like I used to have to mix 5-gallon jars of paint. And if you came in with a chip of paint, then I had to match it and all this shit. But these are things that like I sometimes bring up in meetings just to show that like you're going to get that too. Like whatever's on the page.
Exactly.
You're going to get this too.
I can paint your house.
I can paint your house. Yes.
The right colors.
Exactly.
The right colors.
The color.
Off-white.
So
Robin
like
Egg Blue.
Yes. Robin Egg Blue.
Do you remember it? Robin Egg Blue?
Yes. I remember a majority of the colors.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
I mean, it's like you're also like a fine artist background.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I could paint a little tad.
But if you said that to me, I was interviewing you and my house doesn't, I would be like,
And then I'll stand out as like the writer painter.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Right. Yeah. It's smart, right? Yeah.
No, you have
it's a transactional business.
Yeah, you have to make sure you stand out.
Now I'm wondering what my chicken is.
I know. Find your chicken.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll think on it. I'll think on it. I'll keep that in my back pocket.
Question. Now, because
many years later.
Well, no, I'm just saying, no, we're going to get
decades.
No, we're going to get there too, but I it's interesting because how do you feel about the TV landscape now as far as getting like your first job and your second job? Because I came through the fellowships.
Great.
So I was like you. I came up in Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Like, shit, 2.5 years ago.
Okay, that's it.
And Nickelodeon is what got me into the game.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, do you feel like, because you did say it was slightly easier to get an agent, but do you feel like it's harder to get staff now? How do you feel?
I mean, I think it's the same game that it always was.
Okay.
It's about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And your contacts and making new ones and keeping up the ones you have. And I can go into meet and greets, right? And I can turn those into friends. Okay.
That's a difference.
That's a difference. And I've done that.
Yeah. When you say meet and greets, do you mean like general meetings?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've gone to general meetings and then became friends with those people.
Yeah.
Like you don't waste anything. I mean, and it's only if it works.
Yeah.
It's only if you kind of click and this and that. You can make it, especially, you know, you email them after. If you're in the interview and just talking and they're like, oh, you should watch Park. You haven't seen Parks and Rec. Oh my God, you should watch it. And I'm like, no, you know what? I read the pilot while I was on jury duty, all this stuff, whatever. Like I was waiting with a woman who was like in the marketing department and she was reading the script and I was playing games on my phone. She's like, I'll play games on your phone and you can read the script. Like, And so I read the script for Parks and Rec. I mean, it was like nuts. It was so nuts. She doesn't work there anymore, so I won't get her in trouble.
That's crazy.
So she, it was like a crazy time. So, and I read the script but it wasn't what the show turned into.
Right.
So I was like, I don't know if I want to watch it necessarily. And she's like, no, it's the greatest show. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so I went and I watched it. And then I wrote her going, thank you so much for turning me on to that show, blah, blah, blah. And then she remembered something I said to her about like my husband and what he does. And she wrote me going, I was watching Titanic and I was thinking of your husband and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we develop a relationship. And that's how it works. It's so much easier now. Like all these things, that's what you say. Is it harder to get work? I was saying, was it harder when there were four channels on the air? No, it's not harder now than it was then. Is it more confusing and spread out and this and that and harder for reps to figure out what's happening when and this and that? Yes, it's a little bit more challenging, but there's more ways to make connections to people. There's the foundation programs like you're talking about in workshop. We had one. We had the Warner Brothers program. Yeah. That was it. Wow. You either got in that one
or that's it.
And I tried three times. I got in my third time.
Five. I think like most of these programs only take like five or seven people.
Well, that one took in a lot more. Okay. Yeah. But
it's only one. That's crazy.
Yeah. And in some of our biggest showrunners, Matt Weiner was in it. Greg Garcia was in my, I mean, huge people came out of that program. Almost so many people worked from the time I was in there. But that was it. We had one program. You have, you know, NBC, the Writers on the Verge, seven programs. So, I mean, there's more opportunity to get in with those companies and work for them and stuff. So it's not harder.
Okay.
That's my opinion. It's always been hard. When was it easy? That's what I ask.
Well, you know what's interesting? I feel like...
Never.
Yeah.
Right. Why was it easy to be a creative person and make a living at it?
Never. Yeah. No, I mean, ever since I like came to LA and I've like been in this business, without fail, every rep I have ever had, every meeting I've ever had, they're like, well, it's almost impossible, you know?
Right.
Almost nothing gets made. It's almost impossible to sell something. It's almost impossible to get staffed. Like, you know, there was like one point where it was like, I had an agent at WME. Like I had managers who like had a client who'd like won an Oscar for writing and they'd be like, we can't get you a staffing meeting. And I'm like, you're not trying hard enough.
Absolutely. I will praise my manager in what you're saying, because Jeff Holland, who's been my manager, he was started as my agent and then went into management and all that. And we've had agents along the way. He didn't ever believe that anything was impossible. Because my favorite example was he put me up for Will and Grace. I was coming off a show.
Classic, another classic show.
And one of my
favorite. You're just throwing these names out.
But, you know, it was one of my favorite shows. I was coming off a show called, it was called, this one you won't know, but it was Significant Others, was a show on Bravo. Okay. It was an improv sitcom. Mm. And it was little seen, but the critics went crazy for it.
Oh,
nice.
And it changed my career completely. I literally went from Saved by the Bell to not being able to get a job to HBO calling up going, can you pitch a show to us?
Crazy.
Wow.
I mean, that's how much it changed my career. And it was just a fun show. It was like a precursor to Modern Family. It had couples talking on the couch, you know, to the camera. And so I ended up, it was that moment. I was just winding down from that show. And I was co-running. I went from co-producer to co-EP because that's the job I was doing. NBC literally offered me. They go, we're just going to bump you up because that's what you're doing. And I was like, whoa. Really? Yeah, it was crazy. I was like, okay, damn. No money, but you know, the title. And I really appreciated that. So Jeff somehow he got to Alex Hirschreich, who was the showrunner, and you know, he knew of the significant other, he knew of the show, and then he read a script that I wrote, a sample script, and you know, we were waiting to hear, you know, what Alex thought, and I go, this is a long shot, are you kidding me? This is Will and Grace, everybody wants it. It was seventh season,
yeah,
everybody wanted to be on that show, and he goes, I don't believe in long shots, why won't it happen for you? Like, he didn't, nothing stopped him, and I was like, okay, and then I got the interview, and I was like, oh my god, I'm like, can't believe I'm interviewing, you know, for it. So I had another interview for a different show an hour before that one. So on the same lot. On the same lot.
Oh my goodness.
And that's
like, side note, even if it's Zoom, I'd be frantic. Because like, I got a meeting, I gotta make an hour, like, and it's on the lot. Oh my god.
Same lot. So, okay, two different shows. So the first one, and I really didn't like that show.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I figured, oh, watch, I'll get the bad show that I don't like. Yeah. And, you know, because it was even, it moved networks because the network didn't even believe in it. So it went to another network, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I go in for that interview, and all I'm thinking is, I'm going to Will and Grace after this, you know, like, right? Yeah. That's all, you know.
Hurry up.
So I'm in, I'm like in that interview, and the guys were so depressed, and they were like not happy because they were doing this show. They thought they were better than, you know, and maybe they were. I think that they might have been. And I was just like all jazzed and energized. And plus, I was doing Significant Other. I was really, that show was a great experience for me in terms of creatively. And so anyway, I have that interview, I get through it, you know, I'm all bubbly, they're all down, and I go to Will and Grace, and I'm sitting there, and I remember I was sitting on the couch, and I'm looking at all the posters and all the things, and I went, all right, you know, psyching myself, I go, you got here for a reason. You are sitting here for a reason, you know, like, just be yourself, do your thing, you know, and I purposely, like, dress myself to look cool, you know, like, I really tried to be strategic. And first thing, you know, the producer is like, nice, like, you know, and I was like, all right, yeah, I did that. And then they were asking me questions, and I, you know, I had Saved by the Bell, and I was embarrassed, you know, kind of, and they kind of could tell, like, I was hedging a little bit, and they go, what, you know, I said, well, I worked on that, and they're like, you should never be embarrassed of your credits. They were so sweet. And one of them, we had a person in common or whatever. And I just was myself. And then they said, not to put you on the spot, but what would you do next season?
Love this.
Oh. With the characters.
Oh.
And because I was such a fan and I really knew the show, I went, well, we've seen what happens when, how Will reacts when Grace is in a relationship, but we've never seen how she reacts with him being in a real relationship.
Oh.
And they go, that's what we're doing.
Love it.
And I was like,
oh my God.
So
fire.
It went great. Yeah. And I loved them, and it just really clicked. And then they're like, well, you know, we don't know what writers are coming back this season or not, you know, because their pilots, whether their pilots go, but, you know, maybe you'll go back to Significant Others, run that for a while, and then you'll come back on mid-season. I was like, oh, yeah, in a perfect world, I'm going to go do that. And then I'm going to come here, and, like, this is my life, you know. But they actually had me come in for an episode.
Nice.
And I wrote an episode that ended up getting nominated for Emmy for Best Direction.
Excuse me.
No, I didn't get that.
Excuse me.
Yeah, for Best Direction for Jimmy Burrowson.
That's tight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's dope.
And yeah. Wow. So it was amazing. It was amazing.
Do you have any tips on, because a lot of upcoming writers listen to this show. And so do you have any tips for when you take that meeting? Like, obviously, Will and Grace was a show that you loved. You didn't have to go jam pack 30 episodes, but do you have
I had to do that. I had to do that for Community. I had to watch, like,
and that's what I want to hear. Yeah, so, like, how do you prepare for, like, do you have any advice for upcoming writers on how they prepare? Because number one, they're nervous. Like, the first show I ever got interviewed for that I didn't get was Charmed.
Okay,
shout out Liz and Jeff, but I didn't get it, you know. And I remember I had watched, like, holy shit, I had watched,
I know,
40 episodes of Charmed, and you only find out, like, a week. Like, I think I had like a week to prepare.
Oh yeah.
So I was like every night
I watched like every episode before that interview.
Any advice,
like, I know,
for when you interview for a staffing gig?
No, I mean, definitely you don't really have to watch every episode. I think that probably wouldn't you never end up saying half the things that, you know. So I would say always watch like the first, right, the, watch the pilot, watch the finale, okay, and maybe a few in between.
Yeah.
Just enough to know. I mean, people aren't really going to put you on the spot usually.
What is episode 7?
I know. That will never happen.
No, it didn't.
So, and don't try not to get in a conversation of talking about what you don't know, right, you know, yeah, like a character or something that you're not sure, yeah, what, how they track. But I would say just really seem excited about, mm-hmm, the show itself and passionate about it. People want to feel that and hear that usually. I mean, I met on a show that I flew all the way to New York on my dime, but it was a big show, and the showrunners who took it over didn't care about the show at all. I was like in love with the show. It was like my favorite show, blah, blah, blah. It was so, I couldn't believe they're calling me in and everything, and they didn't want to talk about it at all.
Wow.
And I was devastated because I was like, but I'm here,
yeah,
like
about
to talk
show
about the show, and you don't want to talk about the show because it wasn't theirs. They like inherited it.
Yeah.
So you just don't know, and you just do the best you can. You can't, there's no perfect way to prepare, right, for an interview. The best way to prepare is to be confident,
yeah,
and feel good about yourself, not desperate,
mm-hmm,
knowing that if you don't get it, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to go in there and present yourself the best way you can. And seem excited, mm-hmm, and know that if there's something in the conversation when you're there that you feel, like I was interviewing for a show where I was going to be co-EP, and the showrunner, I could tell, you know, he had a lot of family obligations and things were going to be, you know, it was going to be tough. And I said, my son's grown. Mm-hmm. I can come in early. I could stay late. Mm-hmm. I could be there when you can't be there, this and that. And he was almost like, oh, well, I don't need that. And I'm like, yes, you might.
Yeah.
And I'm sure later he thought about it, and I ended up getting that job, and I ended up going in early, and I ended, yeah, up staying late, you know, and all that stuff. It's like, if you could feel in the interview where you can, you know, kind of
value. Yeah,
yeah, it's
that's
not just
chicken.
It's
that was
not
your chicken.
Just chicken, but yes, exactly. It's, yeah, a version of the chicken.
Yeah.
And that's more important of like, oh, you're looking for someone who just is an idea machine, mm-hmm, or this or that. Just kind of like see if you can, you know, see in the interview where you can fit in.
Makes sense.
I would say that's the more important than having watched every episode and know the show like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done the interview, you know, you've won over the showrunner. You're like, I'll come in early, I'll stay late. I've got an idea for next season. This is what I would do with the characters. You aced it. You get into the writer's room. It's your first writer's room. Now, you're really outspoken, you're a really confident speaker, but like not everyone is, right? Like not every writer has that sort of personality. So how do you, if you're a quiet person, how do you go into the writer's room and not have other people like talk over you? And then also like, what are the unwritten rules of the writer's room?
Sure. Well, when I started, I had no idea what I was doing. And you know, the tendency when you're first starting is to talk for the sake of, mm-hmm, talking sometimes, to just be included and to say things. And that's, I learned the hard way, you know, that's not a good way to be. If you are the talkative type, you really are better off listening a little bit, saying something when even if it's not the perfect joke, but it's solid, you know, like, I mean, you don't know people's taste if they're going to like it, but if it's a solid joke, if that's what you're pitching, mm-hmm, or a solid idea, at least people will appreciate the effort and that you didn't just babble and say, you know, throw darts at the wall. That's for the more seasoned writers, the upper level writers, it's sort of better that they're the ones doing it. Mm-hmm. And then the other writers kind of listen and just chime in that right moment when they're looking for something. Then you're like a hero.
Mm. Mm.
So that's where you're better off, especially you're quiet. It has nothing to do with that. You don't need to be, you know, on all the time. They don't even want that.
Mm.
They'll be talking usually, the upper level writers, and because they can think faster and they know what they need, and we need, you know, we got to break the story. We know what we need, blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of throw it to the room of like, okay, you know, anybody have any ideas for this, mm-hmm, blah, 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 you know, and then you hope that somebody says something good, or they're thinking the whole time as they're listening. So really paying attention, staying off your phones,
yeah,
you know, and things like that are good. I mean, it's hard. I actually can't project that well in the room. I have a tendency to say things under my breath, you know, because I'm just, as a writer, you're not really used to talking it right?
Well, you're kind of bouncing it off my mind by walking and doing other shit. Yeah.
Right. You're not really used to saying it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I kind of tend to like think out loud, say it under my breath. I don't always project. I was in a room with four women who were actors turn writers.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm.
And they could all project. Yeah. And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Like, you know, so I would put myself right next to one of the showrunners, you know, one of the co-EPs or whatever, and I would like say it and he'd go, oh, what Jordana said, you know, nice one, who would kind of help me occasionally, you know, if I was too soft, you know, speaking. So anyway, that's what you can do is position yourself as close to the showrunner.
Smart.
Like, you know, it's like a classroom. Yeah. Picture yourself, put yourself next nearest to the showrunner so they can hear you better is a good, always a good way if you're not loud.
Yeah, I think one thing I did too was like pay attention. Like sometimes, you know, it'd be something in the room and I'd be like, let me go do some research on this at night and then come in tomorrow. And it'll kind of help you speak up because it'll be like, hey, I did some research on what happens when somebody gets a parking ticket and this whatever, you know, whatever. Because they, you know, because they're like, we'll get back to it. And I might automatically do it. That kind of helps you build confidence also. It's like just staying aware and that'll slowly get you those little wins where I'll be like, thank you. Like, you know, because then it's not great. Judged.
That's
as like
great.
A pitch, you know,
that's exactly what I would do. I was on a show where the showrunner didn't like to hear women's pitches and didn't like me in particular. Oh, and I thought, OK, you know, I want to keep this job for the whole season. How can I what can I do? And I went, well, he seems to be able to hear one line. Okay. Smart. Like when women talk, like he'd hear the first line and then wah, 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 you know. So like Charlie Brown, you know, I think was in his hair. Like, so I went, how can I? So I go, well, nobody here is pitching one line jokes for the script. Mm. I'm like, maybe I could be that person. Mm-hmm. So I would go after the run through, I would go and, you know, when I can really concentrate by myself, I would just go through the script and write all these one line jokes. So at the beginning, nobody would listen to me because nobody, they knew he didn't like me and nobody wanted to pay attention to me. You know, they all kind of moved away from me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, whatever. So I would go, well, I have a pitch for that. And they'd be like, and then I'd say it and they go, meh, okay. You know, that's pretty good. You know, now we can go home early.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
right?
Tight.
I got to the point after like weeks of that where I would go, I would just let them, you know, be doing their thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody has a line. This and that. I would sit back and I go, yeah, I got a line for that. And they would be like, what? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and turn to me with all these smiles, like knowing you're going to get us home early, you know, and I would pitch it and they'd be like, that's it, and go home. So I managed through the whole season and, you know, changed the perception from, you know, for myself.
That's a great story.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard and it was, I mean, it was so hard, but I give myself goals, you know, and my goal was not to get fired before the end of the season. Yeah. Someone else got fired, you know. I mean, he was not beyond firing people. And I go, if I don't give him a reason to fire me.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely heard, like, writers share some stories about, like, rooms that were a nightmare for whatever reason, right? Like, sometimes it's the other writers. Like, sometimes it's the showrunner. Sometimes it's the co-showrunner. Like, what do you do when you're in a situation where you feel like you can't win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I said. Okay. So here's one where I got on a show after it started. They had let a woman go after few weeks, not even that long. And I heard nice things about this woman and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm stepping into a dead girl's shoes. Was it her or the person or the place? Was it the person or the place?
Yeah.
And then I get there, I go, oh, it's the place.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And I went, all right. And there was somebody there who did not want me to be there, you know, like wanted to be, you know, in charge kind of. And, not the head person, but someone, you know, to make it hard for me. So I went, all right. I remember I journal it, you know, so I had it going, oh, 3 weeks in, I go, this is a no-win situation. I'm trapped because I have this contract. She doesn't want me here. What am I going to do? So I'm like, how do you make a no-win situation a win? I said, well, the one thing I can control is I can write the hell out of my scripts. And they can't do anything about that. I know I have so much confidence in my ability to write that I can write. that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting. So I came in with an idea. I'm kind of mixing stories, but I came in with an idea for an episode, and they came in my office and said, we're going to give your idea to this other guy because we think he can write it better than you. Wait, the idea that I came in with, this guy can write better than me? What are you, what? And I'm like, oh, all right. So then they gave me an idea that was so off the show's, you know, radar. I go, if I write this episode, I will get fired. Because they don't like me. And if I write this idea as an episode, I'm going to get fired. And I call my best friend, I'm crying. They're going to fire me. She goes, there's nothing you can do. I'm like, there's always something you can do.
I love this attitude.
I never believe there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
So I'm in the room and I hear them talking, and the showrunners were male, and they were going to write this teenage girl episode. And I was going to write this political episode, which I'm not, you know, I'm not the person to write that. And plus it didn't fit the show. It was a comedy. It just didn't fit the show. So I said, can I talk to you guys during a break? And they're like, oh, we got to talk to her because she works here. So, you know, so I go in their office and I go, you know, would maybe I should write the teenage girl episode and you guys write this political one? And I mean, they're like, oh, yeah, maybe she's right. Yeah. Okay, you write that one. I was
wow,
like,
wow, that wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So I write that one. It comes out fine, you know, and you know, because it was an okay idea. It was, you know, so it came out fine. Theirs got shelved.
Wow.
It was so bad that they never even, because the idea was wrong for the show. And they shelved it. I go, do you think I would have gotten fired over this one that the showrunner's script got shelved?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have been fired.
They set you up for failure.
Completely.
Yeah.
They tried to.
Yeah.
And I got out of it because I like kind of went around them. So I never complained. I learned my lesson. I was on a job where it was bad and, they would put porn on my computer. And that was a day that I complained about it, and I became the problem and blackballed. Yeah. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of stories, but I've had a long career. But I learned that it's like you don't complain. You know, like you just deal with it. You find your ways to deal with it. You complain to your friends, whatever it is. Never complain to your because your coworkers are not your friends. Man. You know, they would throw you under the bus to keep their job in a heartbeat. They're your friends after you're done with the show and you're still friends with them. But during that time, you don't know who's your real friend or your coworkers. And that's the truth. And I learned my lesson there. So on this one, I didn't complain, even though they didn't like me and they were trying to sabotage me and all this stuff. And they even gave me like a three-parter. There was a three-parter with two of the writers they liked, and they gave me like the hardest part to write, which was like, you know, they had the fun setup. I had the resolution one or whatever, you know, and I'm like, bring it on. Bring it on. I'm better than that. Like, I'm going to write the hell out of this, and I'm going to make them look bad. Yeah. And I'm like, go ahead. And I did. And I was like, don't mess with me when it comes to the scripts. Facts. Like, you're just going to bury yourselves.
Yeah.
So it ended up at the end of the season, the network execs called me at home directly, and they said, we wanted to pick you up. We didn't know that you were having a bad time with the showrunners, that you didn't get along. They didn't want to pick you up. And they go, we love you, love your scripts, and we want to still work with you in the future, develop with you, whatever.
Nice.
That's how you win.
Because
I look at the big picture. This was one show.
Yeah.
You want to impress the network because that's all the shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, that's...
I know.
But what's also interesting about that is that at the end of the day, the script, like one thing I remember a showrunner told me was like, if I could just get a script that I don't have to rewrite from the first page, I'm happy. Like that helps my day. So I remember when it came time for my script, I was just like, all right, because I don't know about you, but like the first time I wrote, I worked on this Showtime show called Flatbush Misdemeanors. And I remember like when it was my turn to write, I wrote the outline and everything. For a slight second, the pressure hit me. Like I was just like, I'm staring at a blank.
Yeah.
And I'm like the cursor and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, people are going to be watching this. You know what I'm saying? Like people are going to say this, even though you have the outline and you have to stick to the outline.
I love it.
But then I was like, let me just go back to do what I do. Let's act like I'm at the coffee shop.
I love it.
And I'm just writing.
That's great.
And, but at the end of the day, I understand what you're saying. Because like, if I'm going to kick ass on this script, no matter what, even if they act like they don't want it, they're going to love it because now they don't have to start from page one or whatever.
That's
and they
great.
Got a script they can work from and keep the boat moving.
Oh, yeah. If you could do that. I mean, that sometimes you just can't even control that.
True.
Like the story goes in a different direction or something happened before that the episode. But yeah, you just do the best you can. That's all you could do where you have no regrets. I did.
Right.
This is the information I had. This is the best I could possibly. I put every second waking moment into it. That's what I do. So I have no regrets. I can't help, you know, what happens after that. You can't help it.
How was the transition to like running a room or whatever? How was that for you? Because it's different.
It is different. You have to know that people are going to talk behind your back, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, you're the boss.
You're the boss. I have my own friends. I hired my own friends once, and I saw them, like, outside the window, like, complaining about me.
They were talking shit. They were writers talking shit.
They were talking shit about me, and I went, wow, this is what it's like to be the boss. Your own friends are going to talk shit about you, thinking I could do it better than, you know? That's all. And everybody below you will always think I can do it better than you. And that's what you have to go, that's all right, you know? Like, that's what it is. That
it's
I get
part of
it.
The job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't, you go, well, guess what? I get to make the choices.
Right.
That's why I worked my way up to, I make the choices.
And facts.
Yeah. So that, it's, I wrote and shot my own pilot.
Oh shit.
I had a pilot that I had sold to a major network and I was paired up with a producer who we didn't get along and I didn't want to keep doing it. And I kind of quit. And well, a new regime came in and they wanted me to do something with it that I didn't understand. And he was yelling at me all the time. And I just went, you know, life's too short. It was one of those, you know, I'm a mom and I want to be a role model to my son and not a crying mess, you know, like, and I go, life's too short. I'm not doing this anymore. And I went, you know, I'm just going to write and shoot my own pilot because I wanted to, you know, help my reputation with the network and everybody, you know. So I ended up doing that. My manager was my producer on that.
That's
and
tight.
Yeah, he helped me. And another friend who was a reality show producer, he had a company, you know, everybody raised money, all this stuff, and we made it. And I ended up getting the first person who saw it ended up hiring me on a show at the same network that I was, you know, trying to impress. So yeah, it just all worked out. But I forgot why I got into that. I don't remember.
It's okay. It's all right.
Nah, but we were talking about show running.
Would you ask me? Oh, show running.
Yeah.
Oh, so thank you.
Yeah.
So the point was, I really felt like I could do it. I could do a show. I could, and once I did, I go, but I want to put my money where my mouth is. Like, can I really do it? I go, it'll make me a better lower level writer if I can't pull it off.
Yeah.
Or I really prove to myself I can do this. You know, I can be an upper level writer and all that. And I did. I pulled it off and I was really happy with how it went and it just gave me more confidence.
That's dope.
Yeah.
You wanna ask our special last question that we always ask?
Or the wrap up?
Yeah, you wanna
Okay. Well, as we come to the conclusion of this absolutely amazing episode.
Super.
We have a question we ask every writer who comes on the pod.
Yes, we do.
And that is, can you please tell us three things that you are watching, reading, and listening to that you're loving?
Okay. I just watched Fisk.
Oh, I loved Fisk. Very funny. Very funny.
Okay. Loved, loved, loved. I just finished it. I love Fisk. I'm reading Burn It Down.
Nice.
Yeah, and in fact, she's going to be speaking. I was going to go to that. What was the last one?
And what are you listening to? This could be a podcast or music. Are you listening to any music right now or any podcast or whatever?
I listen to...
Or audiobook or something.
I listen to Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Classic. Hey, that's fitting, though.
That's what I've been, like, dancing to. I dance, like, in my kitchen.
I love that.
Okay.
I have to move. Because I had a bad back.
I love that.
So now that I can move, I just move.
Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Yeah,
I don't know why. It's a great song to dance to.
It is. And that's fitting, though. Like you said, it's like, I think one thing for you is like, you're always like, nah, ain't no mountain high enough. Like, I can get over this. Whatever it is, I'm going to make this work. I'm not going to let this stop me. Yeah. And to me, that's the biggest thing. Like, we almost have to be delusional to want to do this.
Yes.
Like, you know, when you said like 5% or 1%.
Yes. It's like, it is crazy.
It's like crazy, but it's the only way you can get there. Otherwise, there's no chance.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't believe in, like, people are like, oh, you're worried about your age, or you're worried about how hard it is in the business now, this and that. You can worry about all that stuff. Of course you can. Yeah. But do you want to work or you want to worry? Like, like, just
do you want to work or do you want to worry? That's
too
merch.
Many quotables.
That's merch.
It's about three t-shirts in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, bringing it full circle, I think that we know that the reason Jordana has had such longevity in her career is because there ain't no mountain high enough for her.
And I want to eat, right?
And she's always bringing the chicken.
Always bring the chicken. Yes. Another amazing episode of
Two Writers
Talking Shit.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.